humbled by your kindness, Stan. I have loved being the Schertz Lectureship for years now, thankful for all the work that this church has done. I look out on an audience of people who have shown me nothing but kindness and love over the years, and encouragement and strength, and I thank you for it. I believe our brotherhood is better for people just like you. And may God bless our work this week as we try to enrich ourselves by studying God's Word and by enriching others with it as well. I'm reminded of Acts chapter 20, verse 32, where Paul commends the elders at Ephesus, and he says, "Now I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and able to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified." And I hope that is what happens to us this week. With the schedule change, I've somewhat adapted my sermon a little bit because some of the material that really would have led into mine would have been covered by some other speakers that have not yet spoken. And so I'm going to invite you as we begin, and I'm going to kind of break the rules of lectureships. I'm going to go back to a couple chapters. Maybe I'm not supposed to, but go back to Genesis 17 briefly with me. I appreciate Wayne's good lesson the hour before, speaking of Abraham and the covenant that God made with him, and the great work of Abraham, being a friend of God. And that last section that he covered there from Genesis chapter 12, where Abraham shows his humanity, where Abraham exposes a flaw within his character. Is it not easy to look at Abraham? Is it not easy to look at the children of Israel in Numbers chapter 13 in their fear? Is it not easy to look at men like Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19 in his fear of Jezebel? Is it not easy to look at Matthew chapter 14 and look at a man like Peter in his fear and what it led to, and condemn them and say, "Well, how could they do that? It's easy." But brethren, let me remind you, and let me remind me of who we are. Are we not humanity as well, with all the flaws therein? I don't know how many times my fear has caused some of the same, and excuse the phrase, but stupid mistakes that we would condemn them for. That's what you're going to read about here. And it's easy to get lost in it and say, "Well, how could Abraham, the friend of God, do this?" It's easy for me to look back into my life and say, "I know how he did it. I know exactly how he did it." The same way I have done it. And if you knew me personally and knew of my mistakes in my life, you would say, "I know how he did it." If I was to be transposed into the pages of Scripture, back to the book of Genesis, people would look at me and they would say no different than what they see in Abraham. And as we study this, I appreciate what Wayne said. We sometimes get lost in a lot of this great theological discussion of everything, but sometimes we forget the story of it. And while it is the story of Abraham, and it is no doubt the story of God, I propose to you today that it's the story of me. It's the story of what I go through just the same. Genesis chapter 17, you find that God has intervened once again. Genesis 12, you find that God has to intervene to keep this promise. He's making sure his promise is going to be carried out, even though Abraham is messing with it. He says, "She's my sister." Listen, God had to intervene. If Pharaoh had had a child through Sarah, or Sarai at the time, it would have messed with the promise. You come to further into the chapters of Genesis, and you find very quickly that God is continually intervening in the life of Abraham to fulfill his promise. And we're going to notice this morning that God is the great promise keeper. Notice with me, go with me to Genesis chapter 17. We find that God has been making these promises, and now something has changed. What has changed? Well, Abraham decides that, you know, he needs to have a son. His wife decides they need to have a son. It's not happening on their time schedule. What has God? God's told them, "I'm going to give you a son. It's going to be a child of promise, but it's not here yet." What do? They take it into their own hands, right? And so you see in chapter 17, verse 1, when he was 99 years old, that the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. This is God's command to him. He says, I'm about to give you my covenant, and I want you to do this. I want you to walk before me. I want you to be perfect. Well, they start to make some changes, don't they? He makes this change. God changes him from Abram to Abraham. You turn to chapter 17 and verse 15, and it says, and God said to Abram, as for Sarah, thy wife, thou shalt call her name Sarai. Or not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And go to verse 16. I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her. She shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Then Abram fell on his face and laughed. We often remember Sarah for her laughter, don't we? But who also laughed? Abram. Shall the child be born unto him that's 100 years old, he says, and Sarah that is 90 years old and bare? And Abram said to her, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah, thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and shall call his name Isaac. God makes a correction right here. Abram has this son, and born to the bondwoman, and he says, oh, that he should live before thee. And God says, no. I'm going to give you a son, and his name's going to be Isaac. And that's who the promise is going through. Abram still isn't getting it, is it? He's thinking still that it's going to be on his terms and his way. But it's not. It's not his terms, and it's not his way. So he left talking with them. It says, you go to the end of the chapter there, verses 23 to 27, and you have this account where God gives them the covenant of the circumcision, and they finally do it. Now turn with me to chapter 19. Chapters 18 and 19, you've got the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah take place. And there's no doubt some terrible events. Going back to Genesis 13, it begins with Lot pitching his tent towards Sodom there in verse 11. And then he eventually ends up living in Sodom and Gomorrah. And listen, sin is going to take you so much further than you ever want to go. Ask Lot. And so they end up being called out by God to come out of Sodom and Gomorrah. They go to this mountain. They go up into the caves. And there, incestually, he impregnates his own daughters, Lot does, and creates two terrible nations that are later going to plague the children of Israel. This is what's leading up to our chapters right now. This has all been taking place. And now we get to chapter 20. And you get to chapter 20, and the very first thing that you read is this word, this set of words. And Abraham journeyed and sojourned. Abraham journeyed and sojourned. There is no doubt God calls Abram from Ur the Chaldees to go to a place that I will show thee, going to be Canaan. It's going to be that place that God has promised him and his descendants forever. Getting there isn't always easy. Sometimes the hardest part is the trip. And they've been kind of through it. And now they've gotten here. And listen, it's immediately, it seems as if he reverts back to an old problem. I would put it this way. New location, same old problem. Immediately, what happens? And so it says, Abram journeyed from thence towards the south country, dwelled in Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abram said of Sarah his wife, notice what Scripture records it as. I think this is an important detail. Abram says of his wife, she is my sister. It doesn't say, Abram said of his sister, she is my sister. Why? Because she was his wife. I don't know how many commentators I've read that have actually fell on the justification side of Abram in what he did. As if in saying that it's okay, you know, situations change and thus your ethics change with it. No. It was his wife. And he says, she is my sister. I want you to note first, as we go through these two chapters, the flaw and faithfulness or faithlessness of Abram. The flaws and the faithlessness of Abram. I am not criticizing Abraham. Please listen. I am not. I am pointing out that he is just like us. He is pointing out, I am pointing out he is just like Gage. She is my sister. And Abimelech, now the word Abimelech here, it says Abimelech, king of Gerar. The word Abimelech, literally, it's a translation. We don't really get it in our text, but it means the son of the king. This is a prince. And we often think of kings sitting on this great throne and, you know, like Uther Pendragon, and he's got all this great all around him and all these servants, and it's just this majesty, and they're living in this great castle. That's not really what we're looking at here. We're looking most likely at a clan-type mentality, a tribal mentality, with someone that would be the tribal leader, the chief, if you would maybe a better way of looking at this. And so you've got Abimelech, and he's come into his territory. And the first thing that Abraham says to him is, she is my wife. Just right out the gate, she is my wife. Now, lest we think this was something that just happened on the fly and it was a momentary mistake and a lapse, let's jump forward a little and let's go down here to verse 12. Well, in verse 10, let's start in verse 10. Abimelech said to Abraham, why dost thou done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. He had pre-planned his excuse. He had pre-planned his sin, even, brethren. And let's not diminish it. It was sin. And I think I can point out five reasons in a moment why it was sin. But let's not diminish it. And let's put it in maybe perspective for us today. Have you ever been pulled over for speeding? I can honestly say it's been a long time for me. I guess as I've gotten older, my foot has gotten lighter. But it's been a long time, thankfully. But I can remember, and I will be honest for a moment, thinking when I got pulled over, what will my excuse be? And if you haven't done it, you're a liar. We've all done it. We've all sat there and thought, oh, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? We're no different than Abraham. Can you remember your parents catching you doing something wrong? And what did you do? I can remember getting in trouble at school one time. I got in a fist fight. With a young man that had been teasing me incessantly, and I turned around one day in the hallway and I knocked him square off his feet, got sent home. And I can remember thinking the whole way home on the bus, what am I going to tell my dad? And I was conjuring every deepest thought I could of why. Well, I was doing nothing different than what Abraham did. He was, and listen, the problem and the flaw is fear. But you know what fear comes from? Selfishness. I want you to notice with me the text and what it says. And listen, these are Abraham's words. Abraham said, because I, listen, circle these words, underline these words in your text, and I think it'll pop out to you very clearly. Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my... Notice the pronouns? They're all personal to Abraham. He doesn't say, I'm worried for my wife's sake, that they might take her and ruin her purity, that they might defile my wife. He says, I'm worried for my own skin. Would you not say that that is the picture of selfishness? His fear wasn't based on what would happen to my wife. I'm thankful for the brother that spoke on Genesis 3. He talked about how, and I love the point he made, of how while Adam sinned, he owned it. And he kind of stood up for his wife in the process, and he took the blame. And men, we need to be men of integrity. Don't be like Abraham in this instance. His faithlessness and fear came from a position of selfishness. When we become selfish, everything becomes excusable. Is that not true? That's what Abraham did. Sending her to be in the harem of the prince of a king was excusable now. I don't know about you, it ain't excusable in my home. Is that excusable in yours?
Shouldn't be. We should look at our lives differently. Abraham was concerned with his own skin, not hers. Fear, faithlessness. Notice, secondly, the fright of Abimelech because of this. The fright of Abimelech. But verse 3, but God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and he said to him, behold, you are a dead man. I don't know how you would react. I know how I would react. If God came to me in the middle of the night and said, Gage, you're a dead man. There's a lot of twist in this that I find very peculiar. We've read it already. Go back with me to verse 10. And I want you to look at this phrase now. God tells him, you're a dead man. And I want you to look at it in light of verse 10 again. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what hast thou done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place. Where was the fear of God not? It was not at this moment in Abraham. But I'll tell you what, it was in Abimelech. Because Abimelech hears, you're a dead man. And what's the next thing he does? Notice. You have taken a man's wife. And Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, Lord, will thou slay a righteous nation? Said he not to me, she is my sister. And she herself said, he is my brother. And in the integrity of my heart and in the innocency of my hands, I have done this. And God said to him in a dream, yea, I know that thou did this in the integrity of thy heart. For I also withheld thee from sinning against thee. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou will restore her, and know that thou shalt surely die. Or if thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. Therefore, now listen. Therefore Abimelech, he waits a couple days. He kind of ponders it, cogitates on it, has to decide, what am I going to do about this? Is that what the text says? No, it says he arose early in the morning. He calls all of his servants in and he tells them of all the things in their ears. And notice what the people are, his servants are. Notice how it describes them. They're afraid. Abimelech has fear. His servants have fear, which is now going to lead to him doing something. I would label this the frustration of Abimelech. He calls now. So you've got this fear and faithlessness of Abraham. You've got this moment now where Abimelech is frightened. But notice his frustration. He calls to him early in the morning. He's got his servants together. He calls Abraham in. And he says, what have you done to us? What have I done to offend you? That you would bring on me and my kingdom a great sin. Who even recognizes it for what it is? The man that Abraham said, surely there is no fear of God in this place. He recognizes what Abraham did, even his sin. And so he calls him, he says, why have you done this to us? You have brought this sin upon us. Thou hast done deeds unto me that you ought not be done. And Abimelech says to Abraham, what sawest thou that thou hast done this? Can you imagine the frustration of Abimelech at this point? And I'm going to label this, and we're going to go back to the term again, the fear of Abraham. But I want you to imagine, I love watching football. I love watching football. I despise football fans. I love football. Let me say it again. I despise football. Don't come talk to me about football. I'm sick of it, to be honest. But I love watching football. And I love watching a good running back or quarterback that can run. And can... we have a word for it in football. It's kind of a slang term. It's juking and jiving, right? They can move. And they can make people miss. I watched the game the other night. And this guy, I mean, I bet he broke five guys' ankles as he ran across the field. I thought, man, that's amazing. And what he would do is he would position himself as if he was going this way. And then he would turn and go this way, right? So that's a juke. Abraham tries to do that essentially here. He tries to get out of it by smoke screening, by juking, by showing something different. Matter of fact, you go look up the word jaundice in your dictionary. We think of it as a medical term always, right? Jaundice, the baby turns yellow. And, you know, there's a secondary meaning to that, and it's literally a color you shouldn't have. You think about it. That's what Abraham's doing right now. Listen to what he does. He says, Abraham said, because I thought, first problem, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake, and yet, indeed, she is my wife. Can you hear it? He's doing the juke. Oh, she's my wife. Or, I mean, she's my sister. She's my sister. She's the daughter of my father. See, I got proof. She's my sister. You can't really say I did anything wrong. And furthermore, listen, it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said it. Now to who does he try to shift the blame to? He tries to throw it on God now. Well, God, you know, God made me move, and so I had to do this, and I was worried about my own skin. And do you see the problem? Is Abraham taking anything upon himself yet? I love the response. I believe this is why David is called a man after God's own heart. When David is caught in his sin, what does David say? I have sinned. You know what Abraham should have done at this moment? He has been confronted not by one of God's people, but by a heathen. And the heathen has to tell him, you sinned against me. And Abraham's still digging down in it. And he's joking, and he's jiving, and he's smoke screening, and he's trying to do everything he can to get away from it. But guess what? At the end of the day, what happens? Abraham's wrong. And Abraham sinned. We need to be careful that we don't absolutely destroy ourselves by thinking that we can hide our sin. I want you to turn with me to Psalm chapter 32 for a moment. Psalm chapter 32. The psalmist here deals with this concept of acknowledging our sin. And he starts out by saying, blessed is he whose transgression is covered, or whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom the Lord imputeth not iniquity, in whom spirit there is no guile. Listen what happens, though. He says, when I kept silence, my bones waxed old through my roaring all the day. He said, when I kept it and I buried it inside and tried to hide it, you know what happened? I was agonizing over my sin. I agonized over my sin for day and night. Your hand was heavy upon me. Guilt. Notice the guilt. He says, I felt it. My moisture is turned into the drought of summer. He ran out of tears because of what he was doing. But notice the solution. I acknowledged my sin unto thee, and my iniquity have I not hid. I will confess my transgressions unto the Lord, and thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. This is what Abraham should have done at this point. It gets more ironic, though. You keep reading through Genesis chapter 20, and it gets more ironic. Verse 13, and it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, this is the kindness which you will show unto me. You see the selfishness still more, right? You do see that. You're going to show this kindness. Men, we should show this kindness to our wives. We should be protecting them, not them protecting us. And Abimelech, here's the irony of it all. Abimelech takes sheep. Abimelech takes oxen and men servants and woman servants, verse 14, and gave them unto Abraham and restored Sarah his wife. You know what fear and faithlessness causes? It even causes us not only to be selfish and to put others under the bus, it causes us to push the blame onto other people, but it also causes us to allow gifts that we should never accept in the first place. It is my studied opinion that Abraham should have never accepted these gifts. I know he was a prophet, and God said so. I do believe in my heart of hearts he should have rejected them as he rejected those from Pharaoh earlier. But now he's become okay with it. He gave him a king's ransom. You think about the amount that he gives him. Sheep, oxen, men servants, women servants. Gives them all to him. And then he says, behold, my land is before thee. You dwell wherever you want. It's a blank check. And he said to Sarah, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of thy eyes and all those that are with thee and with all others. Thus she was reproved. Or a better translation, that would be exonerated from this. And so Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children, for the Lord had fast closed up the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Well, so we've seen chapter 20. You see the flaw, the faithlessness of Abraham, the fright of Abimelech. You see the frustration of Abimelech with Abraham, and then you see the fear of Abram and what it caused. Now we turn to chapter 21. And the beautiful part of all of this is going to be exposed. The faithfulness of God. The faithfulness of God. It says, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. Underline the words, as he had said, and underline the words, as he has spoken. That's the point of it all. Through Abraham and Sarah's mishaps, their stumblings, their fallings, their selfishness, their disregard for others, and you could even go back to that last chapter, and we could spend hours just talking about the consequences of our sin on others. What had happened to Abimelech's whole house? Their wombs had been closed. And actually, the Hebrew reading there is not that they could not conceive, but they could not give birth, actually. Consequences on them. So here are pregnant women that cannot actually deliver children because she is in the midst of the harem that she should have never been in the first place. And yet, in midst of it all, God, a year before, had told Abraham and Sarah, in 1 year, on this time, you're going to give birth to a son. And you know what God does? God fulfills his promises because, brethren, God is faithful. When we make mistakes, God is still faithful. Does he allow our mistakes to go unchecked? No. Absolutely not. But does God keep his promise? Absolutely. Does God keep his promise with us today? You can bet on it. Does God tell us that there is a home prepared for us in heaven? That he has prepared a place that is beautiful and amazing for us? Absolutely. Go read John chapter 14. You go read of how God has done that work for us. And God has given us stipulations. He's given us requirements that we have to meet to get there. But does that mean that we won't make mistakes along the way? No. It doesn't mean that. But is God still going to keep his promise if we're faithful? Absolutely. And God says, he visited Sarah as he had said. And the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. And Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age. At the set time which God had spoken to him. You think about the providence of God in all of this. You think about the intervention of God in all of this. He prevents Sarah from being a child of Abimelech by being in his house. He intervenes, doesn't he? Why? Because he's going to make his will come about. She conceived, she bare him a son. And in verse 3, Abraham called his name, the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. This is the name God had already told him to name him. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old, and when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. This isn't the same kind of laugh that was before, though. Because of God's faithfulness, Sarah is able to laugh a different laugh now. Before, it was the laugh of mocking, the laugh that said, it ain't going to happen, Jack. But now, it's a different laughter. It's the laughter that God has made it happen. It's the laughter that you hear. I don't know what you remember when you were children, or you may have small children now. I can remember when both my children were small. And my daughter would run through the house, and she had this little gun. It was a rifle. We're hunters in our house, and so we gave our kids guns when they were kids. She would run through this in her pants. She would run half naked. She'd run and jump on my bed. My little boy would be there, and he was little bitty. And the laughter that would exude from that room still warms my heart fire today. That's the laughter of Sarah. That's the laughter that she looks at and she said, I'm an old woman and God has blessed me, and she's now going to tell that I'm going to be able to give suck to a child when I thought I never would. When I intervened and brought Hagar, the Egyptian woman, into my home and thought I could fix it and I couldn't. And God has still, in his faithfulness, blessed us with a child. How beautiful is the picture of what God does in the midst of it all. She is able to now have a child and give suck. I have borne him a son, verse 7, in my old age. It's a beautiful picture. But now we turn to a different stage. A couple years goes by now. You've got Isaac as he's growing, and now it's time for him to be weaned. Most historians would agree it would be somewhere around the age of 3. And here's Isaac, and he's going to be weaned, and so they have this great festival, a great occasion, a feast. Let's label this section the Feast of Isaac. But a lot's going to happen here. Now, mind you, you've got a boy somewhere around the age of 17 in the name of Ishmael that's watching all this take place. He knows that he's not the son of promise. He knows that he's not the one from whom all nations of the earth will be blessed. He knows he's going to have nations come from him. But he's not the one. And he knows. You think about what it's like to be a 16, 17-year-old boy. I got a friend that I tease sometimes. We tease back and forth because we love each other. And he's an old man, had a child a couple years ago. And I tease him about that. I want you to imagine what a 17-year-old boy would do to another little boy when his mother's 90. Can you imagine the ridicule? You remember Wayne, when me and you were younger, we had the your mama jokes, right? Can you imagine the your mama jokes that Ishmael has going on right here? You might think that's, I'm being irreverent. I'm not, I promise you. Because the text says that as this feast is going on, that Sarah overhears the son of the bondwoman, Hagar, mocking her son of promise. I don't know about you, but my wife is a bear if you mess with her kids. You mess with one of my kids, and you are going to see my wife become a completely different woman than sweet Miss Kelly. Don't mess with them. And here's Sarah, and she's 90. This is the son of promise that God said, I'm going to give to you on this day, and it happened. And now 3 years later, 4 years later, whatever time has taken place, she's got him. They're celebrating the weaning of him. He's going to be a man in the house of Abraham, the son of promise, and it's going to be great. And what is happening? She is watching her son be mocked by this other child that in reality shouldn't have even been there. Go to verse 13. Well, go to verse 12. See, now she tells him. She says, listen, you get that boy, you get him out of here. That's what she tells Abraham. I'm done. You get him out. God has to come to Abraham and says, look, you listen to your wife on this one. You listen to her. She's sees right. And so, in verse 13, he says, I'm also that bondwoman. I'm going to make a nation because he is your seed. God's going to keep, listen, let's keep going back to it. God is faithful. Even when we aren't. When we mistake, we try to intercede and do things our way, God is still faithful. And he says, I'm going to take care of them. And so they get cast out. They get cast out. And they have to go and they have to be under a tree. This is the second time, mind you, that Hagar's been cast out. Go back and read. She's been cast out once before by Sarah. The moment that she conceived, what happens? Sarah becomes very jealous, says, get her out. God brings her back. And now God says, it's time. And he takes her and they leave. We're not going to go through all that. You can read it. Read in the manuscript. But let's turn now to verse 22. This continues, and I want you to notice Abimelech, and some argue that this is a different Abimelech, that this may be the next king or the son of the king. I would argue otherwise. And listen to my reasoning. And it came to pass at that time. At what time? Well, at the same time that just had taken place. What had just taken place? Within the last year, they have been in the harem of Abimelech. And now they've had this son. 3 years takes place. So you got about a 4 year period. I think if there was a different king, it probably would have differentiated it. But it's, and the text gives us this picture at that time. And I think there's a reason. Notice what Abimelech does. He says that Abimelech and Phicol, the chief captain of his host, spake to Abraham, saying, God is with thee in all that you do. He knew that, didn't he? God had closed up the wombs of the women where they couldn't give birth. And now verse 23, and he'd come to him and said, you are going to be a dead man. I guarantee you he remembers him. Verse 23, now therefore swear unto me by God that thou wilt not deal falsely with me. Why does he say that? Because Abraham had dealt falsely with him before. And so now he's begging him, please don't. Don't deal falsely with me. I would say this section, you could label it falsehood feared. He says, but according to the kindness that I have done to thee. What was the kindness? Even though it was Abraham that lied to Abimelech, Abimelech gave him all those wonderful presents. He treated him great, gave him all the land, said, whatever's before you, you take and use it. He says, I want you to remember that. And I want you to make this covenant with me for the future. And he's looking forward now. He says, I want you to make a covenant with me. And Abraham says, I will swear. You have a little encounter there with Abraham and Abimelech about a well, but it's dealt with very quickly and resolved. Let's note a few things. Brethren, we can learn a lot from the life of a man named Abraham. Man, he did some amazing things. He left everything. He followed God with all his heart. But he was just like us. And he made mistakes. And God be thanked that he recorded such things so that we could be strengthened when we make mistakes, that God will still be faithful to us and bring us and use us for his own good to fulfill his promises with us. I hope our time together has been encouraging. I hope it's been enlightening some of our study together. May God be blessed through it.